Back in 1990, the music world was captivated by Gunnar and Matthew Nelson, known as Nelson, after the Twin Brothers had 4 top 10 hits. And further, the Nelsons helped create a Guinness World Record when they became the only family to reach number 1 on the charts in 3 consecutive generations. And joining us right now via Skype and making a connection is Gunnar Nelson from the band Nelson. How you doing?
Hey, Devo, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, I'm doing good, too, because I just found out you guys have released 3 brand new Nelson albums. So I kind of want to talk about each one individually. And the first one is Before the Rain. Tell us about that.
Okay, Before the Rain, the first two records that I'm sure we're going to talk about are definitely for fans of our first trip. The Before the Rain record is the collection of record-quality demos that actually got us our record deal at Geffen Records. And they also include the songs that went on to be re-recorded for that major label once we'd gotten that deal and get released on radio that everybody's aware of. After the Rain, Love and Affection, Only Time Will Tell, More Than Ever. So if you're a fan of those songs, and if those are part of your hit parade from when you were growing up, perhaps, you get to hear what those songs sounded like when we first wrote them and what first caught the attention of John Kolodner over there at Geffen and got assigned in the first place.
And then in regards to that Before the Rain, I read, this is kind of a question that may relate to that. I read that you and Matthew in the very, very early days had a band called Strange Agent. So my question is that true? And then is any of that stuff on that album?
Yeah, it is true. We had a band called Strange Agents. That was our high school band. That's what we actually went through as a power trio. I was actually a drummer and was singing drummer, and Matthew played bass and sang, and we had a guitar player. Basically, we were kind of in the land of the Police. The Police were our favorite band at the time, so we're playing a lot of those kinds of tunes and just starting to really focus on our songwriting. And it wasn't until after high school that we got rid of that band. And we put our band Nelson together, and that's the band that we actually started writing songs for with Mark Tanner and got us our record deal, and everything picked up from there.
Oh, so that's way back in the day. Okay.
Yeah, it's way, way back then. So no, I don't think any of the Strange Agent stuff is going to be on this, but we do have some of the songs that actually we are going to save for the second record to actually record that never got recorded, and of course that early career got preempted by the rise of grunge, so we weren't really able to make the effective follow-up that we were planning on making, and the rest is history.
And then Perfect Storm, After the Rain World Tour 1991, is that just pretty much live recordings from touring?
That is. Now, I know this is saying a lot, it sounds incredibly egotistical, but I can honestly say that at a certain point in time, we had by far the finest live band on the planet, on any stage. These guys were way overqualified for the kind of pop music Matthew and I were writing. And we actually had management at the time that for some reason didn't think it was important to actually film one of these shows. But we were able to find, through the sound engineer that we had throughout all those years, tapes of 3 different concerts that we had done, and we were able to put together an album of that. So it's kind of like an archive for anybody who – we played to over a million kids on that first tour. So if anybody actually went on that tour, went out to see that show, it is a representation of exactly what it was they saw back at that time. And you get to hear the musicianship from the likes of Bobby Rock on drums and Brett Garsett on guitar, and there were no backing tapes or anything. That's how we sounded, dead live.
And the album I'm most excited about is Lightning Strikes Twice. I've heard a couple of the tracks off of that. It's phenomenal. And then you guys have been getting great reviews on that. I read somebody, compared it to the Bad Out of Hell 2 thing that Meatloaf put out. So how excited are you for this new material?
Well, I mean, it's a real change for us, to be honest with you, because we were actually a band that was really broken by the fans, and I'm using that term loosely, but it wasn't really – our first record wasn't really a record that the industry, especially radio, really wanted to happen until there was popular demand, and there really was. And a lot of it was, at that time from, 15 to 25-year-old women primarily were calling the radio stations like crazy until they started playing this stuff. This is different. This is the first time we've actually ever gotten critical praise first for any records that we've ever done, and it's really kind of nice. I mean, some of these reviews that you've been mentioning, are really unexpected, but a real adjustment for me because I'm kind of used to fighting an uphill battle, so to speak. But it's a real pleasure. I put a lot of time and a lot of love into making the record. I'm really proud of the work. I hope it finds an audience. It is a record that's made in a specific manner. We were approached by the label that asked us to make the follow-up to our first record, After the Rain, as if we were making it back then at that time. And that's what we did. I got into that headspace and actually wrote and produced a record that was intended to be the follow-up to After the Rain that we actually really never got to make. So if you're one of the 5 million people that bought the After the Rain record, you will really like this record because it's a seamless transition from one to the next.
And speaking of back then, I want to know, can you still grow that badass hair that you had back then or not?
I still could. I was a world champion hair farmer of all time, Dave. And you know, been there, done that. I just realized that I was saving myself an extra 20 minutes every single day by having short hair. So I gave my hair to Locks of Love and just have been focusing on the music ever since.
There you go. So we kind of touched on it earlier, the Guinness Book of World Record thing. So successful Nelson Entertainer just goes back and back and back. I kind of wanted to ask you about Ozzy and Harriet a little bit, your grandparents. What kind
sure.
of people were they?
You know, they were really, really cool. I know that the show is dated now, but it's hard to imagine the kind of impact that it had back in its day. It ran for 14 and a half years. 435 episodes. It still holds the record as the longest-running live-action sitcom in history. And this was at a time, it was on television in the 50s, at a time when there were only three channels for people to watch, three channels and a local, three network stations, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and then your local station. And that was it. It wasn't like we have, you know, 1,000 channels today with nothing on. That was it. So people, the country would sit down. It was like the Truman Show before the Truman Show, real family playing a real family, and the entire country would sit down and watch it when it came on every week. And it, as a matter of fact, I'm very proud of this. The family was just inducted into the Smithsonian Institution for our impact on American culture and history for the Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet. And that's a pretty groovy thing, but it's just because Ozzy and Harriet really honestly typified the archetypical 50s nuclear family in America. It was the ideal. And when our dad started singing on that particular show, because so many people across the country tuned in to watch it, it was the first use of television to market music. I mean, back then in the day before our dad did that every single week, the commonly held belief was that if you give kids music on television, they're not going to go to the record stores and buy it, which our dad single-handedly proved wrong, and in the process smuggled rock and roll into mainstream American living rooms at a crucial time in rock's history.
Well, yeah, like you said, your dad is Ricky Nelson. He was kind of, you know, broken on that show. I remember seeing parts of that episode. You know, he's credited with inventing the country rock genre, 200 million records he sold, which is insane. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I've got to tell you that my dad is probably the biggest Rick Nelson fan, and him and I actually had the chance to come have a really cool father and son moment last year. We saw you guys the Ricky Nelson Remembered Tour.
Cool.
Yeah, it was an awesome night, and I hear you're coming back to Kansas City, which is where I'm based out of, this next June, so I'm excited to come see it again. So I guess
yeah, we are. The show's going really well, same show that you and your dad saw, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to actually create an event that multiple generations of families can actually come to and get something out of. Even if they didn't grow up with Ricky Nelson music, even if they didn't grow up with Ozzy and Harriet, we're going to teach them why the music that's in their iPod is in their iPod. There's a reason for it. It came from someplace. And certain people had to take certain steps to make it happen. Our dad, I'm proud to say, was really on the forefront of that whole thing at a time when the censors wouldn't even allow you to call rock and roll on TV. It was considered too salacious. How times have changed. But there was a time when that happened, and our dad was the guy that took the stand of playing, I mean, high energy, rockabilly rock and roll on a family, I'm using air quotes here, on a family oriented show, and my grandparents got a lot of hate mail from concerned parents at that time. This is a time when, you know, when Elvis was basically getting censored and only being shown from the waist up and stuff like that. This is the time that we're talking about, and I know it's very, very different now, but and our dad was really on the forefront of that whole thing, and it's best said that, you know, Elvis Presley turned off a lot of parents, Ricky didn't. And Pat Boone turned off a lot of kids, and Ricky didn't. He was really a guy that was cool enough, and also having grown up with the family, unassuming enough to be able to make that kind of impact.
Yeah, and then that night we picked up the CD there, and I want to give you some mad props for the song Just Once More. I think it's probably one of the best songs of all time. The lyrics are real powerful in it. So I've got to know, like, when you're performing that, when you and your brother perform that, do you ever, like, you know, because sometimes you kind of feel like, you know, you got presence there from somebody who's, you know, not living, quote-unquote, on Earth anymore. Do you guys ever feel your dad's presence when you guys perform that? Because I would think that would be kind of a powerful thing.
Yes, we do, and Every Night. And the song that you're talking about, the song that we wrote called Just Once More, and it's pretty much a dedication to anybody that's experienced the loss of a loved one. And it's a reminder to really never take anybody for granted, you know, while we have them here. So that's the song that you're referring to. And yes, I mean, I think the whole Ricky Nelson Remembered show is a way for Matthew and I, in a very real sense, to keep our father alive. And we do feel him on stage every night. And it's not just because we can turn around and see his face on the screens behind us and you know, hear him talking and all that stuff. It's just, you know, our dad, it's important to note, he literally gave his life for rock and roll. He was given an opportunity to choose which way his life was going to go when he did a movie in 1958 with John Wayne called Rio Bravo. And he got to play a gunfighter in a John Wayne Western and did a fine job. And it would have been very easy for him to actually make the transition to be a feature film actor. But he loved music so much that he actually chose to go that route, which was arguably a much tougher road. And he literally died on his way to a concert. So this is a man that lived and died for music. And the least I could do as his son and his best friend is remind people of that not only did he do that, he was that committed to it, but in the process gave us, I mean, timeless songs like Traveling Man, Lonesome Town, Hello Mary Lou, Poor Little Fool, I Got a Feeling, Believe What You Say, Garden Party, so on and so forth. So many hits, 230 million singles the man sold, you know, he just had an incredible impact. And for me, on top of it all, you know, he was my buddy. And so I get to be there on stage, and I get to tell the stories behind the songs, and I get to sing this great music, and I get to feel closer to my dad with every song I sing, and it just doesn't feel like he's gone.
And then I want to talk a little bit about Stone Canyon Records, which is your record label. You've released some Nelson stuff on there, but also previously unreleased stuff from your dad. So I want to know, is there much more unreleased Rick Nelson stuff out there? Is there stuff still in archives?
There is. We have three records in specific. There's a double disc that he recorded live at the Sahara in Tahoe when he had the best incarnation of the Stone Canyon band together. So we're going to be putting that one together. And we also have the record that he was working on when he died. He actually never finished a record that he was working on that's actually wonderful. So we're going to be putting both of those two out. And that's just really the way people are doing things nowadays. You got two ways to go. You can go with the major label thing, which has changed quite a bit, or you can actually put together your own label and try to do it your own way. And that's what Matthew and I have chosen to do for the last 15 years, and it's just been a joy.
And this might make me a geek here, but I had the biggest crush on Sister Stephanie when I was a kid, a.k.a. your sister Tracy.
Now you're a freak. You're freaking me out. Okay.
I love that show, dude. That show was awesome. So I was sad to see Tom Bosley pass away recently. But what's Tracy up to these days? And did you share my love for Father Dowling, too?
I really actually, there were a lot of people that loved that show. It got canceled after 6 years. And it really wasn't for a great reason at all. I guess the network wanted to skew younger or something like that. But it had an audience that was leaning, for the most part, a little older. But it was absolutely fervent. I mean, these people loved this show. So it was really unexpected when it was canceled. She played a crime-fighting nun named Sister Steve. And she did a great job doing that with Tom Bosley from Happy Days. And like I said, it lasted for 6 years and change. And through that, you know, my sister fought cancer and actually beat that in the middle of doing that show and showed a lot of grace and a lot of courage. And she's actually just kind of taking care of her two kids right now. She's given the acting thing a break because she knows she can always go back to that. And she's only got one childhood with her kids. So that's what she's been doing.
I want to make sure we talk a little bit more about the heyday of Nelson back in the early 90s and kind of what you remember most about it. So first of all, what was it like being on Letterman and SNL? And are those two of your favorite performance memories? Are they right up there? Are there ones above that?
They were great. Well, we still actually are the only band in history to ever be unsigned and play Saturday Night Live. This is long before the Nelson thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That we hadn't been signed to Geffen yet or anything like that. And this was 1986, and we got to play Saturday Night Live. A good buddy of ours was doing the booking for the show. And a friend from our past was actually the host. It was Ron Reagan Jr. was actually the host that week. Huh. And we had a lot of fun playing that. It was an incredible experience. Since then, Saturday Night Live through the years has parodied me and Matthew several times. We've got those on our reel, which is really funny. I mean, David Spade playing Matthew Nelson is something you got to see. But it was a real blast. And the whole Letterman thing just kind of happened as a goof. We were actually across the way doing the CBS Morning News. and they were taping the Letterman show, and Paul Schaefer's been a friend for a lot of years, and they pulled us into the studio, and we had like a little impromptu thing. But now I'll tell you what, it was a wild ride that we couldn't really plan for. We've been playing our entire lives, and playing clubs forever. But when you got that kind of success that happens that quickly, I don't think anything can prepare you for it. So we're just trying to hang on and do a job, you know. And it wasn't until after the fact, after all of these years, after we had, you know, really done the job in front of us, did we really realize, hey man, that's an incredible opportunity that we were able to get.
You guys had a number one hit in Love and Affection. Tell us about that song and how you guys came up with it.
Actually, that song's kind of autobiographical. We were always the dorks and the dweebs that all the hot chicks in high school would come to talk about their beautiful dirtbag boyfriends that treated them like crap. We always make the girls feel much better about themselves, give them some self-esteem, and of course they go right back to their boyfriends.
Right.
There's a line in that song, I've been on the outside looking in, and it was really that way for us. And, you know, I think that song honestly was really taken from some life experience, and the funny part about that, it's amazing how attractive you seem to become to women when you have a number one song. Yeah, I was the same guy, you know. I released the song, and then the next week we had a number one song, and all those same girls from high school that wouldn't give us the time of day, man, they were calling. It's incredible.
I need to try that route then, huh?
Yeah, man, play guitar. Any guy who tells you he didn't start playing music in order to impress a girl is lying to you, Dave.
And then the follow-up song, of course, the album track, After the Rain. Tell us about that one.
Well, that's a song, this came from life experience. We had a really interesting time. Our parents, Matthew, my parents, that has had a really ugly divorce. They spent 8 years getting divorced, and we were kind of in the middle of all that from the time we were 10 years old to 18, and experiencing all of that stuff firsthand. And, I forgot who it was, but a buddy of ours brought up the concept of, well, you know, after the rain, you know, you get a rainbow, that kind of thing. And it was in the middle of a conversation right at the time we were co-writing with our friend Mark Tanner, and went back into the studio and wrote a song from that concept, which has a line in it that I love. Don't be afraid to lose what was never meant to be. I dig that because, you know, I suppose we kind of smuggle a message into a song that's disguised as just a typical relationship song. But it's really not. It was really about, you know, keeping your head held high. And you know, we all, it doesn't matter what you do for a living and who you are. First off, high school sucks for everybody. I don't care. But life in general, you know, throws you some curves every now and again. And I need to take my own advice at times, and I've needed to. And now I got a song to point to that gives me that particular line to keep the true north in my compass. And it's really helped me through the years. And fortunately, it struck a chord with a lot of people at the time. There were a lot of soldiers that were over there in Iraq, and the whole action over there had just started. And we sent a bunch of copies of that song over there, and they kind of took that message from it too, which I really dug and heard back, you know, after the fact. So, I mean, technically, After the Rain went to number 3 on the charts, and Love and Affection went to number 1. But I think more people remember After the Rain than remember Love and Affection. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I actually love both songs, but for different reasons. And I really do like the message a lot, you know, even more on After the Rain than I do on Love and Affection.
Like you said, life throws you a curve sometimes. You know, things can get bumpy. It kind of transitions to my next question. So following that first album, you guys had, you know, 4 giant singles off of that. You know, 4 top 10 hits, another one that even actually charted. So there was 5, actually. But then there were kind of some disagreements between you guys and the record company. And there, like you mentioned earlier, the grunge, you know, kind of started taking effect. So it was kind of bad timing. And the next album got pushed back, you know, way too long. So how difficult of a situation was that at the time to deal with that, the resistance?
It was really hard. First off, we were kids. You know, we were really young when this whole thing happened. We'd never done this before. And as I mentioned, nothing could really prepare you for that level of success. You know, all at once, even if you're playing clubs your whole life, which we had been, you sell 5 million records and you're all over radio and touring and doing that whole thing to 20,000 people a night. It's a crazy ride. But what we also didn't expect, and the industry didn't expect in hindsight, it was the single largest paradigm shift in music industry history. What we experienced when we went out on our tour, we went out, we did 205 dates, and we came back to a record company that had restaffed entirely. They fired all of their old veterans and hired kids fresh out of high school from Seattle that were all wearing flannel and were too cool and too hip and all that stuff. And the whole industry really changed. If you weren't from Seattle, it seemed, and you didn't have a heroin problem, they weren't playing you and they weren't talking about you. And that's just what happened. it was a switch and a changeover. And I said that I don't think anybody from the Confidence Rock generation could have foreseen. The only person that really survived all of that unscathed was Bon Jovi, and he even had to go to Europe for a while. You know, so it was really, really tough for us to deal with. I'm not bitter about it, though. I mean, I understand what it was. I mean, basically, it was the same kind of shakedown that the music industry had in a slightly smaller way with the whole death of disco. And what I mean by that is that, you know, punk came right after the whole disco thing for the same reason, and it was a financial reason. The reason being that the monster was so huge when everybody invented or when everybody discovered Nirvana right before then. You know, records routinely were costing $500,000 to make. They were making $500,000 videos. They were doing all this stuff, and all of a sudden, the industry is provided. They're given an opportunity to sign records already done out of Seattle for $20,000, and then make millions of dollars on that, and make videos for $1.99 and do all this stuff. And so that's what happened. It's the same thing, you know, when Donna Summer at the end of disco was, you know, costing $2 million, $3 million per record to make a record, they had to do something. And so there was a reckoning. And you know, a lot of the bands from when we broke, we were really the tail end of that whole thing, a lot of the bands didn't survive. A lot of the people didn't survive. I'm actually most pleased and proud of the fact that here we are all these years later, and we're still making music and still loving it and, you know, still taking a swing for the fence. It's all I ever wanted, man. All I ever wanted to do was make music for a living. And I'm still here, and I'm getting to do it. So I've got the greatest life in the world. I'm not bitter about anything. It was what it was, and I just feel grateful for not only getting to continue to do it now, but to have had the kind of success that you know, I think very, very few people get to experience. It was a great ride and something that I'm very proud of.
I know you had a, you know, quite successful run on Celebrity Fit Club 3, but losing the weight and everything. So how was that experience, and are you still eating lots of grilled chicken these days?
You said run. That was funny. Yeah, actually, you know, it's cool. I mean, I always tell people, ask me about that. They say, you know, you seem to be skinny and you didn't need to lose weight. But I went from 22% body fat to 9% body fat in 6 weeks. Yeah. And they offered me the opportunity to have my own personal trainer, my own nutritionist, my own psychologist, and my own drill instructor, and pay me to go to the gym. There wasn't any gray area for me. You know, it was just one of those things where I really got a chance to get my stuff together in a very real sense. And it was a great experience. The only hard part of that whole thing for me, truly, was getting in my underwear on a human rotisserie for America to see. You know, other than that, it inspired a lot of people. It gave me an anchor for myself. And, yes, I'm still eating a lot of grilled chicken.
Yeah, you have to, right?
Yeah, you just got to do it.
All right. Well, you've been very generous with your time. I know you got to go here in a second. But before you do, I want you to tell us about the future of Nelson. How do you see the future of Nelson, both as far as albums, touring, et cetera?
Well, I mean, primarily the release of the three records that you mentioned was really focused on in Europe. There's going to be a re-release of the Lightning Strikes Twice record here in the States. We're tooling up for that right now. So I have a feeling that you're going to be hearing a couple of those songs on the radio a lot more, which would be just fine with me. And Matthew and I are actually working hard on another project as well, which is probably going to be going even more in the direction of our dad's Stone Canyon band. It's going to be, I mean, I want you to imagine the Eagles with Joe Walsh on guitar, kind of like a Life in the Fast Lane sort of trip. That's what we've been working a lot on. So, you know, even if these three records, these new ones, including the Lightning record, are the last tip of the hat to what we did, what we started back in the 90s, that's great. Honestly, the Lightning record is, I truly feel, the best record that Nelson's ever made. And if that's going to be the swan song for that project before we go into another one, I can hold my head high and say, you know, that was a great, great run. And something that, you know, I love about music. Music is forever. So, you know, once it's vinyl, it's final. And that's really something that, you know, thanks to you, I get to turn people on to and let them check out. And like I said, if they were fans of that first record, that's what they're going to love. But we're definitely going to continue to tour. We're going to be out there doing our thing, from our Ricky Nelson Remembered shows to our Stone Canyon band shows. And if we're in your neighborhood, come out and see us.
And then you've got the website, NelsonKicksAss.com, which, by the way, is a great website name. Got to give you props on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It's pretty easy to remember. So, yeah, and we actually keep that up to date and stuff. And of course, we got, you know, Facebook page and Twitter and all that same stuff, too. So, you know, it's that kind of world nowadays. But please keep in touch with us out there. And like I said, I mean, we live for touring. So if we're in your neighborhood or even remotely close, come out and see us and say hi, because we meet everybody after the shows, too.
Hey, thank you so much for your time. You know, I'm a big fan of all this stuff. And I look forward to seeing you here in KC next June again.
Oh, Dave, thanks so much for the support, man. I do appreciate it. Give my best to your dad, okay?
Okay, take care. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.